You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone who's joining us for today's Business Spotlight podcast. Today I'm joined in studio by the editor of the Business Times. We have Ron Derby in studio with us. How are you, Ron?
Hey, I'm all right. Yourself,
Mateo? No, I'm all right. Good. So today we are just looking at some of the developments that have happened during the week. I think one of the big things at the moment we're talking, there's been a lot of, you know, talk about load shedding, but it's election season. So we thought that we would actually look at some of the issues in the economy that have actually, can I say, been kicked down the road, or issues that have been in South Africa for years but just seem to not being fixed. And earlier this week we saw that, was it this week or last week? Yeah, it was this week. President Ramaphosa was actually stuck on a train, and he hadn't let Prasa know like what was going on. Ron, your thoughts on that whole thing? Like, is it electioneering, or was he like trying to connect with the people?
It is. Well, it's entirely the season, right? Electioneering. And Ramaphosa, since he became ANC president, has been walking the streets of Cape Town, doing all these walks. So this is in coming with what he's tried to sell his presidency as this Tumamina movement. So it wasn't keeping with what he's about. And actually, I'm quite impressed he didn't tell Prasa he's there, but Prasa would have made sure those trains were running. They would have made sure. So it was pretty cool that he actually got there and understood what the day-to-day life of every South African is, with the infrastructure like breakdowns. And that's what's happening right in South Africa. That's what the whole focus is. All this load shedding and stuff is just the state of our infrastructure, and that, and the custodians of that is the government of the day, right?
Mm. Yeah. So I think there's actually been a report, one of our mainline reporters, that's Juanita, actually tweeted earlier today talking about the fact that the president actually met with Prasa. What do you think that discussion was actually like or about? You know, was he actually stern with them? Yep. Like, will we actually see anything later on in future? Like,
look, Prasa has, since Lucky Montana, like, what was it, 5-6 years, it's been pretty in the news for all its levels of corruption and just lack of delivery. And if anything, what I'm hoping the president's conversations were about is about getting these SOEs working optimally well. And Prasa has been just one of those that has been milked. Right? There's a point where I think VBS almost got a 1 billion rand investment from Prasa. And that was all just to show up the looting that was happening with VBS. So, and Prasa, whether it's in the Western Cape or whatever, the train situation in South Africa has deteriorated quite significantly. Mm. And so I think if Ramaphosa is going to, or if he wins the next election, well, the one thing he's got to get working right is his state-owned enterprises across the spectrum, but they do feed in. I mean, the maladministration of them for the past decade, if not more, has now is feeding into the day-to-day lives of South Africans. And if he wants to strengthen his hand, the one thing that his presidency must be about is getting governance correct in all his institutions, Prasa, Eskom, SAA. It goes on and on. But this is where the government's play in the general economy is, right? And if he gets those things working right, governance working properly, where we get politicians divorced from actually the day-to-day operation of the running of these operations, that'll be his single biggest victory, and if he can get that right. So I'm hoping that's the steps he's trying to take. And I'm sure Prasa today was sitting and laying out what their problems are and why they can't deliver. And funny enough, all these things that are barely run, and they all want some sort of cash injection. But Prasa maybe not as much. Prasa just needs someone with operational focus and to get those trains on time and running well and signaling right. I mean, all copper theft, all these things are massive factors in Prasa's life over and beyond the corruption that's been a tale of South Africa for the past 5 years. I'm actually quite bored about it, really. Sometimes, yeah, you look like you listen to the Zondo Commission passes a week and I haven't listened to it. And then people are like, have you heard this week? I'm like, oh, yeah, oh, no. But there's so much coming out, seeping out, which is a problem. But let's not lose focus on the fact that why there's corruption has taken this hold on us is governance collapse, man, throughout the country, throughout all systems, throughout the all parts of the state, and maybe to an extent now we're looking at corporates like Steinhoff and stuff. But governance in South Africa
is a problem.
Is a problem. Let's just not make it a black, white, government, public, private. Yeah, we need to have another conversation. I mean, there's a reason why. Sorry, I'm going on like this, but
no, please.
There was a reason why there was King Commissions into good governance back in the day. Like, there's a reason why South Africa is like, at some point was held up. Oh, this is the vanguard of governance because we were looking after it, and I think there's room for us to go back now and say, look, in terms of governance, South Africa needs a lot of work, a lot of work, and this isn't like a 25-year because of the past 25 years. This country has been governed pretty badly, if you be honest with yourself, for a very long time.
You know, something that I feel like people might not fully get to understand is what, because yes, governance is an issue, but when it comes to the SOEs, what's, I feel like sometimes people, there's like some conflation about how the system actually works. What's the difference? What's the difference, or what's the relationship between, let's say, coming back to this PRASA thing, is PRASA, Transnet, Metrorail. Like, is there a relationship? Are they all the same thing?
No, they're not. Like, they're not. There's you think with the South African economy, what we heard, like, so at some stage, they're all one big happy family. Well, not happy, whatever. Some huge pot of a family kind of thing.
Yeah.
And post 94, there was breakups, like Transnet. At some stage, I mean, SAA used to be under as part of the Transnet field. So then there was what Eskom is doing now,
like,
right?
Unbundling.
The unbundling, like, into three divisions of Eskom. This thing. That's why people are like all in a panic. But yeah, we kind of did it with Transnet. With Transnet was, so PRASA was broke out in this PRASA operating separately from Transnet. Transnet. Freight rail and freight and the logistics, and there's the National Ports Authority that falls under Transnet. So PRASA split out, and which other one you spoke about?
Metro rail
falls under PRASA.
Okay.
So that's managed by PRASA. That's part of their portfolio. So like, so the consumer kind of rail services all under one umbrella is PRASA. And then Transnet took the freight rail, this is like the coal and all the stuff, and all the commodities is still part of the Transnet wing. SAA at one stage was part of Transnet, who got kicked out 2006, I think. That's when there was the call, because SAA, because of SAA's losses, they made a big loss on some hedging thing and it almost collapsed. Well, it put Transnet as a company under a whole lot of trouble. And that's when SAA was spun out into its own separate entity.
So do you, you know, it's actually an interesting point, because it then begs that question of, do we think that these unbundlings that always, you know, happen, do they work? Or, as you said earlier on, it's a matter of the governance at the end of the day, who actually heads up these things, and whether or not they are allowed to push it forward.
They look, South African economy is all, like, it's always been dominated by these monstrous companies, right? It's like Eskom is still a monster. It's probably the biggest company on the continent. So the unbundling, I think, is necessary. So to like break down these things and get a better understanding of how each of them operate. There are two things amiss. I mean, I think governments sit down and say, what is strategic and really of importance, and what is non-core? Like, all companies have to go through that type of thing. Government needs to do the same thing and let go and privatize some. And those which are strategic, okay, mark them out. These are strategic. Give them a mandate, right? It's like a clear mandate, okay? And that mandate must also include, like, the financials. If what? Should they operate at a 2% margin? Should all the profits be reinvested in business? They don't want dividends. But, like, a clear set mandate for all of them, and this is how they operate. And understand, have a clear shareholders pact and how the government interacts with them, how the minister, what role the minister plays with the chairman of, say, an Eskom, right? These are, like, and actually, the funny thing, Mudeo, talking to you now, don't have to be dreamt up. They're there, like, you know, so like all the solutions. They're actually there. Most of, even now, Eskom's current solutions. They're looking at basically someone is going to the shelf and dusting off packages that are made of the past 25 years. You were speaking now about all these plans. Askisa, da da da. We created that, so they're there. We've actually thought about all these solutions,
but
it's just implementation of the past 10, 15 years. And everyone's like talking about populism being a big cancer that we're scared of. South Africa has lived, we are bearing the fruits of our populist age, right? Yeah, the past 10 years. I guess Zuma was, the administration was a populist administration, but actually had no sound policies at all or any clear direction of how they're going to implement anything. So the plans are there, the policies are there. I mean, there are assets in the state that state should let go. I think there's some that they shouldn't. I think maybe you don't want to give Eskom to a private player.
No.
Can you imagine? That's 95% of our energy market. You're gonna choose a private player like even Motsepe, whatever it is, you want to give all that to one person.
It'll be tough.
That's ridiculous, right? Mm. So Eskom needs to be brought, like, so, but then maybe there are portions of it that requires a partial privatization.
Yeah.
And there's other stuff that, look, you know, I've always thought SAA is kind of important, but maybe give it to a private person to own it. But give him your own owners on as long as you meet these particular criteria.
Mm.
Right, then you give the, you sell it off. As long as that SAA, the flag remains on the tip of that wing, you never change the name of the SAA.
Yeah.
Your operating base is always Johannesburg. So there's all things and mechanisms to ensure that you have a flag in the sky, I guess, if that's what's important and considered strategic for South Africa.
Now, I really want to touch on, you know, where Ron is going in terms of, you know, some of these economic plans. But before I do that, you know, just to close out, you know, what we were talking about when it comes to PRAS, I want us to just hear what, you know, the president has to say earlier this week about his experience on that train.
The train in Itama slow, Itama EMA unexplained, Itama e-stopper all the time. It is therefore unacceptable. It has a negative impact on the economy. But Babangata, they have to go to work, they arrive late at work, some of them get fired, some of them get warnings. We are going to talk to PRASA and tell them, Hore, they must get this right, or otherwise heads must roll.
PRASA must get it right, or, you know, heads must roll.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a nice entry point for us to actually, you know, get into the meat of what you are now touching on, because, you know, as a student of economics, I remember one of the courses we did was something called essay economy, you know, and what they did was, it was a year-long course where we literally studied all the economic policies from 1994.
Mm.
And where that was RDP 96, ASGISA in the early 2000s, the new development plan, all of it, it just always seems like, you know, the same economic issues are just being repackaged, you know, one way or the other. My question is, why don't governments of the day actually just deal with those things? As you said, the plans for Eskom were there like 20 years ago. Mm. And I like the analogy you use, that someone actually goes and just dusts off an old plan.
Mm.
You know, why aren't we are now, what, fifth government now?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you think the ANC has ruled the country since 94. It's like, so you think, fine, they could afford to have like a long-term plan and stick to it. However, like the ambitions within the party, the political ambitions of whatever faction it is, right? And when I was younger, I thought like there's strong ideological differences between these two. But it was just literally the ambitions of different factions within the ANC that have made it near impossible to follow through on a course. When all structural reforms are by their nature difficult. And there's going to be like a hard winter before you get the fruits of your endeavors, right? So even, I mean, like stuff like the Eskom, whatever has to be done there in the economy, these are reforms that are very difficult. It will come with the job losses and the negative headlines that come. I mean, now I think it's doubly worse, and it's probably a global phenomenon where you have social media reactions to it. And you see, when some politicians talk, I always get astounded that they're talking back to a Twitter audience or a social media audience. When forget about those short-term things and have a long-term strategy. And the ANC, 25 years, man, you've ran this country. It's been yours to run and lay these foundations down. But it's just like these political ambitions and this quest for power has totally destroy the party's ability to hold fast on one single idea. Hence, we have a litany of ideas. We have 8 plans. We have whatever case may be. There's a new finance minister, and then we say the finance minister must find a way out of our growth solution for us. No, I don't think the plans. We know the plans were there. They've been long been laid. There's no course to be followed. That's a very scary thing. That every new finance minister comes in, especially over the past 4 years, 5 years, we've been looking at a finance minister to come give us some direction on growth. But why? Like, if the party has committed to the structural reform that we all kind of know they are there through all these policies you spoke about, the finance minister must fall into line and continue the path. The thing is, there's been no path that has been followed thoroughly to its final conclusion. So that is the scary thing about the ANC. Now imagine then, what do you for a second,
yeah,
when we go into coalition politics. The more I think of it, yeah, it's like it's purpose is an inevitability that we go into coalition politics. I can't see all our different political parties agreeing on one route, right? Regardless, okay, this is the route we're taking, and fine, the politics can play whatever role it plays. But will they ever meet us on one table and say, this is where we're taking South Africa in the next 20 years or a 10-year plan? That's impossible to create. I mean, not everyone's lucky to have a China state, right, where you can do a 10-year plan. But actually, South Africa is an emerging market country that has all these problems. Like, your head spins, right, at them. We need that solid planning.
Yeah.
It's a country that we can't avoid it, right? We need that long-term planning. Also, and our politics needs to mature enough to that truth that, look, these are the fundamental problems. Price is a problem. The train's being late. The bulk of your population stay far from working here, so they're coming in every morning. If your transportation process is a problem, your taxi industry is a problem. So these are all things that structurally you know you must fix to get your economy working at its best, right? Education, you know this is a thing that you must focus on and have a final solution to where you want to take the country to. And this is apolitical. It is apolitical. It's all in our
it's
best.
It's just what's there.
It's there. It's just what's there, right? Yeah. The land. We know land reform needs to happen. It's just what's there. Like, whatever you come from, whether you Freedom Front, EFF, you know, like, somehow you got to get wealth into black hands. And land is probably the easiest way to do it rather than doing BEE deals on the exchange only. I'm not saying you should stop doing that, but like, we kind of know that is not enough, right? But by its very nature, those BE deals, it's going to be a small elitist class will manage to get a significant stake in those major corporates. These are things that are just there blatantly in your face. You have to look at healthcare. All these are just apolitical solutions. No.
My question then would be, you know, as we're closing out, is, what do you think is the next bubble to pop? Because in any market, if you allow certain behaviors to happen, the result in the market is there's always a crash. And I feel like right now, when it comes to South Africa's economy, the bubble that's burst in the last 2 to 3 years has been the Eskom bubble.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you think? Because the Eskom bubble, it's blown. We're
it's
in
not
the
blown
mist.
Yet, man.
You think it's...
No. Huh? Not yet. If South Africa ever goes to blackout, right, that's when I'd say, it's popped. And I think that's... So I think the management of Eskom is, trust me, South Africa's Brexit. Yeah.
That's an interesting take.
It is politically the one thing. Getting Eskom to work and getting its focus on its operations and sweating the assets, as it were, and getting that thing running smoothly is what we all should be looking at. It's almost apolitical. That must happen. It's our Brexit.
Yeah.
But I think a collapse of Eskom, it feeds, like, when will the economy ever recover? When it's growing at 0.8%? Where, like, those, who's going to pay those debts Eskom has, right? So it's forced back on the state. The state, and that, then, it swings. I mean, the budget, like, and the budget is your sovereignty, right?
Yeah.
The ability to run your own budget is your sovereign power. Yeah. The minute you lose that, and if Eskom collapses, you lose that, right? Then IMF or whatever else runs your budget, and your sovereignty is gone. As... I don't care if you're Mandela, you're Maposa, you're Thabo Mbeki, the smartest. No, once someone else is running your budget, your sovereignty is long gone. So I think Eskom now is that. And I think even these load shedding things, are uncomfortable as they are right now, man, maintenance is back, it's a backlog, 5-year backlog, whatever the case may be. Yeah. They load shedding necessary for it. I mean, they load shit on a damn weekend. On a weekend, there's half the demand.
Yeah.
They damn load shit on that weekend. It tells you how
desperate. Which means desperate. It's just tough.
Yeah. And I think the ANC's biggest fear, I was thinking about that yesterday, their biggest fear is that, imagine load shedding in Johannesburg in the middle of winter.
This is, oh, yeah. This winter's
is,
coming.
Yeah. This is not a South African. Sorry. I know I always tease you, Mudiwe, but you from Zim. South Africans and protests, it's hand in hand. It was one WhatsApp group. It's very easy. And you put them in that situation in the middle of winter in Johannesburg, in Soweto, in darkness, that cold, there's no power. ANC, then the country, it puts the country in a much more precarious position. So I think Eskom is our, definitely is our thing, as I said, our Brexit. And we have to, it's apolitical, baby. It's not, now it, increasingly, it isn't about which comrade or which deployer is running this damn thing. We don't care. I don't care anymore. There's a being the South guys is waking up to that. It's before we close, I mean, I could go on and on about this. Okay, mining company. I'll do an analogy of a mining company. There's a time when commodity prices are flying, and that is when shareholders are telling you, go and find other assets.
Yeah.
And you go and you cross the world, you go into those craziest places, DRC, wherever you go find these assets, and you can tell shareholders, we found this asset, we want to mine it, we're going to put in the shaft there. They will throw money at you. Go and do it. That's when everyone's excited about commodity prices going up and you are expanding. You're becoming a global player in whatever commodity you choose. When those prices come down, the main thing that happens in the mining, on a listed level, you can see that how the investors are talking. Then they're like, no, now you must sweat those assets. Whatever shaft you've built over this period, right?
We want our returns.
Yeah, so if you haven't built a shaft yet, they're like, hey, stall, no more shaft building. It's an asset, hold it. But wherever the shafts are, we want someone here to focus on sweating these assets.
Mm.
We don't want anyone talking about growth. If you're a CEO talking about growth, they're going to fire you.
Yeah.
Clear. And if that is your natural flair deal making, you're going to be fired. Yeah. That's happened to Cynthia Carroll, people like that. Then they'll bring in a miner who will come and look after the actual assets and get as much money out of these assets and sweat them well. Eskom is the same position. Like Eskom now, like, we don't want any political type CEO. All the politics needs to be pushed aside. Huh? And you need someone there operational to get all these old power stations. What the average age 38 years?
Yeah, because I was looking,
working optimally.
I was looking yesterday. They said during their press conference that the average lifespan is 37 years old. But I was interested, and I saw that because, you know, for those who don't know, Ron has a chart in his office with all the Eskom. With all the Eskom power plants around the country.
Mm.
And you see that 13 out of all of them are already way above that 37-year threshold. So, you know,
I mean,
it's
like
a bit tough.
Sad thing. Like, there was a... You know, Mudiwa, the power generation on the scale is new. It isn't like an old antiquated technology from the 1700s. 1900s. Like, yeah, that's when people started building power. So it actually is the... So now every country had to like flip over to the next stage. Whether you build more coal-fired power stations, which we are in, or you build more nuclear. But this is almost everyone is at the same pendulum. I mean, I guess, developed countries flipped over maybe a decade or more ago. And we are right there, and we're struggling to just like, okay, renew. It's kind of still new in our thinking, and we just haven't handled it very poorly. And this is our Brexit, baby. No, this is
our Brexit.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of our discussion today. As you heard, you need to tune in because, you know, we could go on with some of these discussions. One of the big takeaways from what Ron is saying is the fact that, and I like the quote, Eskom is literally South Africa's Brexit. And he's saying that for South Africa, it needs to stop being about politics and it just has to be about ensuring the country's success into the future, because load shedding, all of that stuff is not going anywhere for the next 5 years. And that's going to transition into the next government. And we hope that the trend of economic policy is not actually being implemented over time.
Load shedding could end, though, anyway.
Not over the next 5 years.
It could.
Huh?
It could. If South Africa has a funding solution, solution to Eskom, the maintenance gets, they get up to date with their maintenance going forward. Because you think demand for power is no longer where it was in 2008, right? Uh-uh. Where there actually was a blackout, where we couldn't meet. So right now demand has fallen off. Eskom's installed capacity, they have a surplus. So if you get your maintenance right, you get a long-term funding plan, a plan that now enables you to continuously maintain your existing power stations.
Yeah.
Load shedding's over. It's done. It literally is. But you need to... And that is long-term funding is a tariff question, and it's a question about, are we getting equity injections from private shareholders, or is our stake going to entirely fund all its almost 440 billion debt?
They can't.
So you solve those things. Load shedding is over. I categorically can say, okay, fine, load shedding is done.
Ron is taking his reputation on that. Fix the maintenance, sort out some of the funding.
That's the ultimate most important thing. Anyway.
So, yes, that brings us to the end of today's show. This has been Multimedia's Business Spotlight Podcast. My name is Mudio Mob Justice Gavaza, and I've been in studio with Ron Derby, who is the editor of the Business Times. Keep it locked. This is Multimedia Live.